We are getting closer and closer to the state cod season. As everyone knows, the harbor's buzzing. People are getting ready to go fishing, and much to talk about this year. And we have Matt Nichols, who is the groundfish manager for the Alaska Peninsula, and he's on the phone right now with us. We're going to discuss this upcoming cod season, as well as just the general situation surrounding the state cod opportunity and cod stock in general. So I want to say first, thanks, Nat, for coming on today.
Yeah, you bet, Austin. How are you doing this morning?
Doing very well. It's a very nice day outside. A little chilly out here, probably similar to Kodiak, I'm guessing.
Yeah, we're in our third month of real winter for the first time in a couple years. So
yeah, exactly.
Same. Yeah, having trouble getting used to that. Yeah.
Same for us as well. Well, as we kind of talk about that, hopefully that can play in a little bit into the conversation as well about the potential for the cold and water temperatures for recruitment classes of cod. First and foremost, cod season's opening up here for the state waters. There was no federal cod season for the first time in quite a while. We will have a state-run cod season beginning, I believe, March the 7th. Is that correct?
Yeah, Roger. So we'll be looking at noon March 7th, but also there's a weather delay reg, so we'll have to take a look at the forecast there on the 7th and make sure we don't have any gales. Last year, got that reg in place every year, so we'll just have to look at the weather, but if the weather looks good, it'll be noon March 7th.
Outstanding. Okay. Yeah. Now, this is obviously a bit of a different year. We've become accustomed over the last several years to seeing dropping quotas. Really quickly, can you give us a little bit of background history as to where the cod quotas were maybe 4 years ago and then what's happened over the last 4 years?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess going back, you know, going back to 2012, that's, you know, sort of that's a breaking point in state waters and federal management. That's what we talk about, the beginning of sector splits, where it stopped on the federal side. It stopped being a race between all the gear sectors for cod, and all of the different gear sectors got their own quotas. At that same time, the state seasons were sort of restructured so that they intermingled well with those federal seasons, and we had opening dates that lined up with those federal seasons. Back then, you know, 2012 through even, you know, 2015, 16, you know, we had big quotas. So the South Penn State Waters GHL is based on 30% of the Western Gulf ABC. So in those years, you know, it was up until recently is, you know, a couple, 4 or 5 years ago, we were looking at, you know, 25 million pound quotas for South Penn there, you know, so that would be, you know, 22 million pounds for pot gear and, you know, 4 million pounds for jig gear. Then beginning in, let's see, with the 2018 season, we saw that big reduction in the quotas. That came from the results of the 2017 federal survey that showed a big decline in cod in the Gulf of Alaska. You know, the fisheries sort of showed that coming into, you know, the 17 fishery, you know, we didn't catch the quota. Fishing was slow. The quotas were really big compared to the amount of fish that appeared to be on the grounds. Sure enough, there in 17, the feds did their survey. It showed that the stock was really down. The general thinking there is that some of those really warm water events that we saw in 2015, 16, 14, 15, and 16 really were didn't help cod. We had older fish that were starving and dying, and then we had younger classes that didn't survive well. So there was kind of a big hole in the structure of the cod population, where you had this, you know, warm water that really did not help cod survival. You know, I know a lot of guys that drive around with, you know, RSW systems and are looking at surface temperatures a lot. You know, they certainly saw that, right? I mean, we had some really warm water temperatures there for a couple of years. And that the general thinking is that's what led to this decline in the cod stock that we're still feeling the effects of. There was a lot of concern coming into, you know, this year, where we have, obviously, the stock is predicted to be, this year is predicted to be the low point in the stock. And then moving forward, you know, the assessment models are saying that we'll start rebuilding, we'll have new classes coming in and start to rebuild the stock. There was a lot of concern about some of those predictions or some of the assumptions going into that assessment, because we knew that we were in another sort of warm water event. You know, last summer, even last winter, we had some pretty warm temperatures in the Gulf. I think what you know, what we were just talking about, having real winter this winter, the latest I've seen is that those warm sea surface temperatures have started to dissipate quite a bit in the last few months, where we've had a lot of storms, right? I mean, we've had just lots and lots of storms for the last 2 months. That's helpful because it mixes the surface down into the lower, cooler layers of the water. And then we also just have a lot of cold weather, you know, a lot of north and northwest, bringing cold air down and really cooling off the surface. You know, there's a little bit of, you want to be cautiously optimistic, because even when we had the original, you know, the blob, the 2014 through 2016 heat event, it ebbed and flowed. You know, it had really warm points, and then it had points where it sort of retreated and looked like it was going away, but then it would come back. So this latest heat wave event looks like it's dissipating, but I guess, you know, I would just urge some caution there that, you know, just because we're having a period of a few months where it looks like it's dissipating doesn't mean that it's over, but it's going in the right direction.
Yeah, and so
and we know that cooler water can do nothing but help the cod stock, so.
Yeah, and what you said there was important, I think, to note as well, that smaller surface temperatures or lower surface temperatures are important, but it's got to get down deep as well. And so those storms churning the water, I know that they're seeing some places in the Bering that are still, I think, 5 degrees above normal temperature right now. Have you guys checked the Gulf temperatures? Are they getting back into a normalized state on the bottom?
Yeah, so I don't know about at depth. You know, sea surface is easier because you can take those temperatures with satellite readings. We typically don't get the temperatures at depth until, you know, that information comes off surveys and stuff like that, where you've got temperature probes on trawl gear or something like that. I know that the feds have some monitoring stations where they are collecting temperatures at depth, but I think the recent article that I saw was just looking at satellite data and sea surface temp.
Okay, very good. So, and my final question on the information, you gave us so much to think about there, but my final question that I want to ask off of what you just said was about the model showing rebounding stock, and then now the cooler water temperatures hopefully promoting that opportunity. Have you seen anything in the surveys that show juvenile classes are rebounding?
Yeah, so there's a number of different surveys that go into the assessment. The big driver is the federal bottom trawl survey that they do every other year. So we had a survey in 17, and then this most recent one was last year in 19. There is not one scheduled for 20 because this is an every other year survey. So that's the big driver. That's why if you look back through the history of quotas, you'll see that they're generally paired kind of in two-year blocks. That being said, there are other surveys and other data sources that go into the assessment every year. One of them is the state trawl survey that we conduct on the resolution, IPHC longline survey. There's a sablefish longline survey. You know, and those surveys all encounter cod, so they take that data into account. There's also some spring larval surveys that are conducted. And all of that feeds in every year. The most recent larval and young of year surveys I saw for cod that went into the last assessment that we used for this year's quotas was not good. It did not show, I think it was below average, recruitment. But the hope is that moving forward, if we can get to a place where we're at least seeing average recruitment, the stock will start to rebound. As I said, you know, there are some concerns about how safe some of those assumptions are about, you know, average recruitment, given that we know that above normal temperatures in the water don't favor recruitment, and we knew that we were seeing those temperatures, but now they seem to be cooling off a little, so that's at least encouraging.
All right, so to recap what you just said, we all know that the cod quota is built on a survey. There's the every other year federal survey, which just happened, and that is what created the GHL that we have now, and caused the federal season not to open and to have this minor, or this, I wouldn't say minor, but much smaller reduced opportunity for the state season. But you're saying that the state has other surveys that it takes into account. So do the federals count those as well into their season? So could we see potentially if there's like a blip in the survey that shows increased stock, could you guys consider that for next year's harvest?
So all of the cod fisheries in the Gulf are tied to the one federal assessment. But that assessment takes into account the state survey. So we take all of our state survey data and we give it to the federal stock assessment authors, and they incorporate that into the one assessment. So it's not that we're doing separate assessments. It's that we are collecting data at times when the feds aren't. So in these off years, we continue to do our surveys. If we saw a big increase in COD in our state survey next year, that data would be incorporated into the stock assessment for the 2021 season. Again, it's used, but it's not as influential as the big federal survey. So it would help. It would probably bring the numbers up, but the real driver of the assessment is the federal trawl survey. One thing I will note about this year and the federal season's being closed, I'm sure everyone's aware, but just a reminder, you know, we're very close to this overfishing level, but we're just above it. But what's actually closing the federal seasons this year is a trigger to protect stellar sea lion forage. So we found ourselves in this little narrow 2.5% range where the estimate was above the trigger that would close the state fishery, but below the trigger that closes the federal fishery. So that's why we have we're having a state fishery and no federal fishery. And the state fishery was again reduced an additional amount in recognition that the stock was really depressed, close to the overfishing level, and in recognition that, you know, the state also has some interest in reflecting the federal measures that protect stellar sea lions. So we've kind of coordinated on that, but we are, as you mentioned, having a small state season this year.
Interesting. So that gives a lot of background on how we got to where we are today, potential reasons. I think that everyone's obviously hoping for a rebound in stock, but given the climate shifts that appear to be happening, it's difficult to see what will happen in the future and if there's any longevity to this. So I guess that's kind of a wait and see situation. But getting down to brass tacks, which is of course the state season coming up in about 4 days, given the weather, the fishermen are going to go out, and there has been some discussion about a catch share program amongst the fishermen where they will share quota. Similarly, these things have happened in pollock, slow pollock years where there's low numbers, and they've come together as a fleet and decided to share the quota. I understand that there's discussion about that happening this year as well, and that's completely removed from you as a manager. You have no say or control over that. But there will be a season here today, and I think some of the question is really centered around over the last couple of years, we've seen a significant portion of the jig quota be pulled out because the pot fishermen have overfished their quota, and then it's dipped into the jig fleets. And previously, maybe that wasn't such a big deal, but now it's becoming a very big deal because the numbers and the margins are so thin. Is there any precautionary measures as a manager that you are taking to prevent that from happening to the jig quota?
Yeah, so I think you've characterized it well. We've had overages the last 2 years, and the way the fishery is structured, you know, the state waters season gets 30% of that Western Gulf quota, so that's the only piece of the pie that fishery gets. So if just the way the seasons are structured with the pot gear fishery going out first, if they come up short, that stays on the table for jig gear guys. If they go over, it comes out of the only remaining fishery that's open, which at that point is the jig gear quota. In past seasons, you know, as you mentioned, you know, these fisheries are structured to catch a lot of quota fast. You know, the pot gear fishery is sort of built to be big and efficient so that, you know, we can get, you know, 20 million pounds caught in a, you know, 2-3 week window when they're schooled up and spawning. And then you've got the other part of the fishery, which is a jig gear fishery, which would really prefer to be open 365 days a year. So we're trying to balance, you know, 85% of the quota going to a fleet that wants to catch it fast, and then 15% for a fleet that wants to have it open as long as possible. The tools we've got, the management plan that's been adopted by the board with input from the fleet, was doing a good job at accomplishing that, right? So we've got a pretty good track record since sector splits. We're generally within 3% of the pot gear quota on average. You know, that level of management precision with how dynamic the fishery is as good as it's going to get. And that worked well for years. We typically have jig gear seasons that are open, you know, I think on average almost 360 days a year between the state season and the federal season. So lots of opportunity there. So the plan was working well, right? I mean, we were catching the pot gear quota fast, and we were stretching the jig gear fisheries out over almost the entire year. What's happened now is we've got the assessment numbers are down, the quotas are drastically reduced, but we're still using the same management plan. My tools haven't changed. The department's ability to manage the fishery hasn't changed since 2015 when we were trying to catch 25 million pounds. And then on top of that, the fishing hasn't really slowed down. You know, last year we saw really strong fishing, both in pot gear and jig gear season. So in the past when, you know, we were plus or minus a few hundred thousand pounds every year, that was just the acceptable sort of margin of error. What's happened recently is that we still have the same tools and we still have the same margin of error as far as our management precision, but now we've got federal seasons that are closed, quotas that are really small, processors that are shutting down for a portion of the year, so every pound counts. So now what used to be sort of an acceptable margin of error in the past has got people's attention because it's being felt. And I hear that, you know, that is not lost on the department. But that being said, the tools we have to manage the fishery haven't changed to sort of adapt to these low times of abundance. If there's a feeling amongst the fleet, and I think there is among some portions, that the current management plan is now not serving the participants in the way, you know, that they would like, that's a great conversation to have. I'm happy to help anybody work their way through either the board process or talk with the department about, you know, what this fishery should look like, because at the end of the day, this is, you know, this is your fishery. So if it's not working for you, you know, I'm here to help this fishery work for the people that depend on it.
Okay, so just to kind of wrap that into an analogy that maybe helps everyone understand it, before there was these huge quotas and there was a margin of error based upon the fishery, that was acceptable, a couple hundred thousand pounds plus or minus. And then now the issue is that margin of error, a couple hundred pounds plus or minus, is not just a portion of the jig quota, it's the entire jig quota. And
right. That
makes a big difference. So say a family had a income of $25 million. They were spending and living within the means of $25,000 in an acceptable way, but then all of a sudden the income goes from $25 million down to $1 million. You're not going to be able to pay the same bills that you were before. And you would expect the family to adjust. The issue is that with this change in the total harvest, you do not have the means to adjust with the management plan you have, is what you're saying.
Right. So, you know, the regulation book that all the participants have to play by is the same regulation book that I have to play by, right? These regs are developed through a public process with the Board of Fisheries, with input from the participants, and the department. And, I don't have the ability to go off the rails and do something outside of what's been laid out in those management plans. I do have the ability to help participants change those regs and talk about how it could be structured in a way that reflects the needs of the fleets better. You know, we just had a Board of Fish meeting here in Kodiak where the jig fleet and the pot fleet came together, came up with a new plan to roll over some of the uncaught jig quota in April, and they also have the jig season opening now here on January 1st every year, essentially overriding the federal season so that they can get working on their quota earlier. You know, there's tons of different ways to structure these fisheries. The way it's structured right now was working well, but that was a different time. So, you know, these are living regulations. There's no, I think there's no expectation that, you know, the management plan that was put together in 2012 should not, you know, be updated and looked at to make sure that it's still functioning the way the people who depend on it want it to function.
Okay, especially considering the significant change. Now, to push back one on you, just to see what you would say to this, because I'm sure this is an easy objection to raise. You know, we saw that with the salmon season over the last several years, due to the concerns over chignik stocks, we saw emergency actions taken that overrode the Board of Fishery regulations, where we had actual days that were scheduled and allotted based upon the Board of Fish taken away from the June schedule, which was unprecedented. We saw that the management had potential to do that. Do you have the power to have some executive authority to limit the pots for the pot fishermen?
That's a good point to raise. You know, that decision that came as far as adjusting the June schedule in season, came all the way from the top of the department and then triggered an emergency session of the Board of Fisheries. So there was quite a bit of structure behind that. You're correct. In situations like that, the department or the commissioner or the Board of Fisheries can come together to address a situation on the fly like that, and that's what was done. For us, as far as a pot limit, something like that, that is something that was discussed in the department. It's hard to know what fishing is going to look like. We have to make sure that we're being equitable as much as we can when we start talking about implementing emergency measures. These outcomes that we've seen in the last year, where we had that pot overage that ended up closing the jig year fishery early, that was not that's not the desired outcome for the department. Certainly something we take to heart and are working hard to avoid this year. But if you look again, looking back through the history of the fishery in the last 8-10 years, that level of management precision was not extraordinary. It just happened to have more of an impact on participants that year, given the low stocks. So we've had lots of conversations within the department. In fact, there was a lengthy discussion, month, 6 week long discussion about whether the state was even going to have these fisheries this year, or whether we were going to coordinate with the federal system and close state seasons outright. What we ended up with is the fishery that's in front of us, which is a reduced GHL, but with management measures that are similar to what we've seen in the past. I will note, I know you touched on it, but I am aware that there's a catch shares plan sort of being circulated amongst the pot gear fleet. I just like to applaud that effort. I think the fact that the pot gear fleet is recognizing that in these times of low abundance, we can't expect these derby style fisheries to be successful and accomplish all of our goals. Working together like that, communicating with each other, communicating with the processors, communicating with the department, that's the way that we can find find a route to success even in these times of really low quotas.
Okay, so that's interesting. So it takes a lot, I'm guessing, for this to happen, for management to happen on an emergency basis like what we saw in the salmon fishery, and that just was a circumstance that seemed to rally the troops enough to make it happen. The opportunity here from the fish fleet to have a shared catch limit, I think that there is a big point of that, is to allow for there to be jig quota left on the table to make sure that that's not an issue for the fishermen who depend upon that. So it is, the management can only do so much. It's good to see the fleet come up as well and take accountability and responsibility for their end as well. So it sounds like this is going to be just a season where there's opportunity. It's going to be very different on the fleet side, not so different on the management side. But would you say that it would be something, going ahead into the future, if the fishermen here in this community would like to see a change, if they feel like maybe the management style is not working today, when would the next Board of Fish meeting be, and what are actions and steps they could take to start moving forward the conversation about changing the regs to allow for a more fluid and dynamic fishery? And just finally, I've put three things in here, but just for closing, what would you think would be successful options for those changes? What would you think would be potential regulations that would help?
Sure. So the next meeting for Alaska Peninsula groundfish is February 2022, which sounds like it's a long ways away, but the deadline for those proposals is April 2021, so that's essentially just a year from now. So Anyone who's got an interest in working on those regs or, you know, suggesting changes, you've got a year to think about it before the deadline to submit those. I make this offer to everyone, but I'm happy to help anyone navigate that process, to look at the regs, to look at what the proposal application looks like. You know, it's a very simple form. It just says, you know, what do you want to change and why. For people who are unfamiliar with the board process, I'm happy to talk with them about, you know, how to engage in that. It's actually a, you know, especially when compared to the federal council process, the board is fairly easy to navigate and you know, pretty friendly to new time participants. So there's about a year to get proposals in. You know, I instead of starting the conversation with, you know, with tools, I guess it's good to always think about, you know, outcomes. What do the participants in this fishery want? You know, I think you've got a pock gear fleet that would prefer to have the fishery go fast so that they can do something else, whether it's, you know, get ready for salmon or go pollock trawling or something like that. You know, the pot gear fleet has an interest in getting the season up and down when the fish are in aggregated nearshore dense spawning aggregations. That's understandable. The jig gear fleet, I think, would prefer to have, you know, not necessarily they don't need the high volume of quota, because we've seen in the past where, you know, there was so much quota it they weren't going to catch it. But I think what's in, I don't want to speak for the fleet, but it seems to me in my conversations that having opportunity, you know, having a season that goes on all year, is what's important. And we see that. If we look back through, you know, through the last few years, you know, on average that jig season's open almost all year. You know, I think the average is 358 days a year. You know, even last year when they lost half their quota due to that pot gear overage, with the state and federal seasons combined, there was still 316 days, I think, of jig fishing open. But if we want to have a conversation about how to make sure, you know, you have a jig gear season that's open all year and a pot gear season that's still fast, like I said, that's worked well in the past when we had lots of quota. In these times of lower quota, you know, most of the suggestions I could think of come at the expense of efficiency in the pot gear fleet. You know, you're essentially trying to find a way to slow that harvest a little bit. There's a number of different ways to do that. You know, the federal system has addressed some of that by splitting seasons up into A and B seasons. You know, a lot of that was designed to address stellar sea lion concerns, but it's also, you know, that also goes a long way towards sort of spreading that harvest out over the year. I think, you know, you've mentioned pot limits a couple of times. You know, I think all the tanner crab fisheries have different numbers of pot limits based on the quota. You know, right now in the state waters cod fishery, it's 60 pots no matter what the quota is. If there wants to be a conversation about, you know, having a smaller pot limit when quotas are smaller, you know, we've got a lot of data to look at that tells us how that might work, because I think all of our tanner crab fisheries are structured that way, so that's not really even a new idea. You know, there's other things that, you know, you could throw out there, but again, they all come at the efficiency of the pot gear fleet, you know, trip limits, stuff like that. You know, one suggestion that maybe for jig gear fishermen to think about is the state quota is generally bigger than the federal A season, and yet the state season doesn't start until that federal season is over or March 15th. The Kodiak fleet has just decided, well, let's just start our state season on January 1 and start working on this. You know, so one way to avoid an overage coming out of the jig quota is to have the jig quota caught before the pot season starts. Again, that comes back into timing and what's important for the jig fleet. They don't, you know, necessarily want to catch all their quota in January and February. They would prefer to have quota available, you know, in May, June, and July when, you know, the fish are still around but the weather's nicer. You know, I understand all of those things. Happy to help anybody in the fleet talk about that and figure out a way that works best. But I guess I would just, you know, end by empowering the participants who all live in the same small towns to, you know, sort of come together and structure this fishery so that it's working better for everyone involved. The Kodiak fleet just had a really sort of meaningful conversation amongst themselves about how best to structure their quota allocation so that it's, you know, so that the jig fleet wasn't leaving so much on the table, how to give access to the pot gear fleet to some of that quota, but without the jig gear fleet, you know, losing it totally. You know, there's lots of different ways you can structure this, and I think it's all really interesting, and it should be viewed, you know, as a positive thing. I hope it doesn't always need to be sort of adversarial. You know, it doesn't need to be the fleet versus the department or jig gear versus pot gear. You know, this is, you know, I hope people feel like, you know, we're all here to sort of try and work together. I'm just, you know, I'm as invested in these fisheries as you know, some of the participants or the, you know, processors or municipalities that rely on this income. And, you know, I'm here to help, so.
All right. Well, I appreciate, Nat, for you giving the time of your schedule to meet with us today to give us a lot of really great information. I was really excited about this conversation. I feel like a lot of good stuff came out of it. I know you have a busy day, so we'll go ahead and let you get it back on with it. But again, thank you for all that. And if you're interested in talking to Nat, I know your number is out there. Is it okay for us to post that number on this interview so that way people can reach out to you about the Board of Fish process?
Oh, absolutely. Please do. You know, it's a pleasure talking to you today, Austin. And I would, you know, just encourage anyone who's listening, if they ever have questions, concerns, thoughts, you know, I'm here all the time. My number here at the office in Kodiak is 907-486-1840. And, you know, if you have specific questions, that's great. If you just want to call and, you know, say hi and check in and talk about the weather, talk about the board schedule, talk about, you know things that are less pressing, that's what I'm here for. So, you know, call anytime.
Awesome. Thanks, Nat. Really appreciate it. Have a great rest of your day, okay?
You too. We'll talk to you later, Austin.
All right. Nat Nichols, he is the manager for ground fisheries for the Alaska Peninsula. Had a great conversation with him just now about the state season coming up. There will be a limited opportunity for fishermen to fish with pots and some quota for jig, and it looks like the pot fishermen are going to be working out a way to share the quota so that way there will be no overages that dip into the jig quota. But just a lot of great history, a lot of great background about why things have changed so quickly, where things are going, and the potential need for changes in regulations at the next Board of Fishery.